transgender and bathroom. Two words we've been hearing a lot lately in this national conversation about which bathrooms and locker rooms trans people should use. We're having that debate here in Washington. State Initiative 1515 would limit people's ability to use the bathroom that matches their gender identity. Opposing that initiative is Aiden Key, the founder of Gender Diversity. Aiden says this bathroom debate has turned a spotlight on transgender people, which might be a good thing in the long term, but in the short term, it also means he and other trans people are getting some awkward questions.
Very personal questions about my body and my experience and all of that. Who does what to whom in bed? You know, things that you would not ask a stranger. You would hopefully not ask anyone except maybe your close friends. And even that might be over a couple of drinks before you delve into that. So I asked myself, why do any of these people feel justified or entitled to ask these questions? What's underlying that? And that's where we start to touch upon some pretty layered and deep undercurrents.
What does underlie those questions to you?
It ties into a number of things. For example, I'm in my early 50s. So what kinds of images or representations or messages did I get about who transgender people were or are as I was growing up? Well, I got that from different movies. That might be the movie Psycho. So even though it's not about a transgender person, we see this man dressing as a woman, and we have that association with criminal, scary behavior. Silence of the Lambs is another story where the serial killer in the movie is trying to become a woman, and in a very horrific way. So you have all of that in the same bag of tricks as you meet a transgender person. So it's not a stretch to understand why someone might grab the hand of their young child to pull them away out of fear. Well, my child cannot be exposed to that. That person is not safe. Rather than looking at the fact that we're real people, we have families, we have children, we have spouses, we have jobs, we have lives.
Well, you just named a bunch of old movies.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reflect on where transgender visibility is in 2016?
Well, that's a pretty critical piece because the representations of transgender people are changing. I've done interviews quite a number of times in different forms of media. The questions before have always been, when did you know? And what about your genitals? Maybe not in so directive terms, but the inquisitiveness is so high. That's shifting. You know, we'll see whether you ask me about my genitals or not, but I'm kind of hoping we can, if we do talk about that, we talk about it in a more complex way. And I might be asking you, Bill, about yours at the same time,
right,
just to even it out.
Right.
But the questions and interest is getting deeper and more layered, more complex. And that is a good thing. The other thing is that the internet is allowing any of us, myself as an individual transgender person, or the families who are supporting their children in this journey, a platform to share that with a broader audience and in a more instantaneous way.
You've described this moment of visibility, though, as a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, the challenge is that the more engagement that you have with a transgender person or people, the more you know and understand about it, the more it's demystified and this is significantly less intimidating or scary. But those who are fearful can inspire and support the fear of anyone else around them. So we're seeing that even in Washington State as we have an initiative out there, I-1515, to repeal protections against discrimination for transgender people. Keep women and children safe. Please sign this petition, is their message. It's a scare tactic. It's a red herring. It's a diversionary way of scapegoating transgender people for a much bigger societal ill. This is gaining visibility so rapidly, and the ability to have forums where you can learn more or to have visible transgender people is really challenged. Number one, it's challenged because transgender people are in danger of serious either physical or sexual assault or murder. It's hugely prevalent in outrageous numbers. So the fear within our community and the ability to be visible takes a really courageous person. How does the rest of the world gain empathy for our journey, for our experience?
Aidan, someone listening who is curious, wants to understand transgender people and issues more, maybe for themselves, maybe on the behalf of children or some other group, what should they do?
They should get to know some transgender people.
It's the best way to do that.
That's a good question. Stop being resistant to it. I mean, ultimately, transgender people are all around, so find them.
You and I meet on the street. I don't know that you're transgender.
That's right. Well, and that's a misperception that most people have, is that they can tell who a transgender person is. But I have spent 2 decades now talking about my experience and talking about the work that I do. I talk about it to anyone who asks, wherever I go, because it really doesn't take long. I'm not putting it in anyone's face. Hi, my name's Joe. What's yours? Oh, hi, I'm Aidan. Oh, nice to meet you. Well, what do you do, Aidan? What kind of line of work are you in? And I take a deep breath because I know that what I'm saying might be startling to them. And I say, well, I run an organization that supports transgender children and their families. Pause. And
what do they usually say next?
They don't know what to say, so I've learned to keep talking.
So that person you've just met, and they ask you your line of work, mm-hmm. and if we get past that pause, you don't know how long the conversation is going to go. What do you want that person walking away with?
I want them to see that there's nothing to be afraid of, number one, and that's pretty easy because there is nothing to be afraid of. But I also want them to see someone who's experiencing joy in life and happiness and comes to them in an open-hearted and respectful way, because I believe that that inspires the same from someone else. And that I see as being a very, very effective approach.
So we're having, as you and I call it when we started this moment of visibility, of a spotlight on transgender issues. What do you see as the probable outcome and the ideal outcome? Where do you think this moment is headed?
The probable outcome is the same as any other social justice movement. You can chart it. It's the progression is happening. And that when there is greater awareness, greater visibility, more information, and more one-to-one connections, that distress and fear will dissipate. So I believe that that absolutely will happen. But I doubt that it will ever in my lifetime be this sort of utopia where being transgender is not an issue in some way. I expect to be navigating this in some way my entire life. But I do know from what's already happened in my 20 years of stepping into this world, I have seen significant progression that has matched the other civil rights movements of our time. And that provides me a lot of relief. And in the same way that the younger generations are a bit mystified at why the older generations still struggle with people of different races or people of differing sexual orientations, they will be equally mystified by why we are in such distress about this issue today.
Aidan Key with Gender Diversity, promoting education on gender issues for trans kids and families. We mentioned Washington State Initiative 1515 about who gets to use what public bathroom. The organizers of that are gathering signatures now toward a spot on the November ballot. We have invited the sponsors of Initiative 1515 to come on this show. We hope to bring that to you in the next couple of weeks.